Sometimes it feels like the sun will never rise, like the birds will never sing again. Believe in a power greater than what you are going through. When you don't know what to do, keep breathing.
That's right, when you don't know what to do, just keep breathing. From the City of Angels in Los Angeles, welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, at CaregiverDave.com, along with, well, normally my lovely co-host, but she's not here today, so I'm not even going to mention it. And we're also coming to you live 24/7 and on demand, numerous syndicated radio and podcast networks on 26 global audio and video platforms, including iHeartRadio, iTunes, YouTube, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Vimeo, Stitcher Radio, Blog Talk Radio, CastBox, and a whole bunch more. In fact, we are very proud to be voted number one caregiver podcast of the top 50 on Player FM and number two caregiver podcast on FeedSpot out of the top 60 and number two on CaringVillage.com. And we have an especially exciting show planned for you today. Mark Stephen Porro, just like Zorro, a New York native, earned an industrial design degree from The Ohio State University. After years of agency work, his love of acting led him to Hollywood, where he appeared in dozens of TV, film, and stage productions. Mark also spent his 28 years in Tinseltown engineering, entrepreneuring, I should say, not engineering. There's a difference. He started five nonprofit companies, but holy applause, none were intended to be. He now lives in the south of France, but hold your pity. He, of sound mind and body, chose to suffer in the heart of wine country where the locals insist his French isn't so bad. At least that's what he thinks they're saying. Mark's an award-winning designer, writer, and director. He's written lots of jokes, several screenplays, and one award-winning short film, A Cup of Tea on the Commode, a sad, sweet, and funny memoir, is his first published book. But before we get started with Mark, I want to take this moment and thank my last week's guest, Christina Ramirez, a serial entrepreneur bringing her empowerment curricula to audiences everywhere, from children to corporations. And just a reminder, you can watch or listen to that interview and all our interviews, actually, on CaregiverDave.com, my membership website, and also on the 26 global audio and video platforms that I just mentioned previously. Okay, enough of that. Mark, so great to have you on the Caregiver Dave Show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Hey, I'd like to ask my guest, just who is Mark Porro and why was he placed on this earth?
I have to admit, I knew this question was coming, so I gave it much thought.
You cheated.
I have a thing that I put on my Facebook thing when they ask for a quote or something, and I think it really is my thing. I say, find the joy. And so I try to find the joy in anything that I do, and then I try to spread it. So, any situation, if you can, you know, I think it's a choice. You have an attitude, and you have a choice, and you say, listen, I'm going to make the best of this no matter what happens. And that certainly came into play when I decided to jump in and take over 24/7 care of my mom. So I'd have to say that's it. Find the joy.
How long ago was that?
It began in 2011, 9 days after her 89th birthday. I got a call from my brother who said that our mother just shut down. She was at a senior center. She went there for activities 5 days a week. And they called and said, come get your mom. She's not dead, but she's just... basically gave up and won't respond. And
was it
so they didn't call an ambulance?
What was her ailment?
There was no ailment. I think she was just depressed, as we found out, but I didn't know at the time. It was you get this call and they said the doctor cut off all meds and food and water, and hospice came. And I kind of freaked out because 14 years earlier hospice was called and to my father. And 2 days later, he passed. So I took the quickest flight I could get back to our home in New Jersey, the house that I grew up in.
You came from France?
Pardon me?
You flew from France to do that?
No, France. I moved to France in 2016. So I was in Los Angeles at the time.
I see.
And so I flew home and mom was in bed, comatose, semi-comatose, wasn't responding to anything, barely opened her eyes. She did respond a little bit to touch after a few days, but we were all her six kids came. I'm the third son and the fifth child and the tallest. So he's had three boys and three girls. And so we were basically on death watch. And then we also, she was Catholic. We all grew up in the Catholic Church. And so we had a priest come in to give her the last rites. And we just waited. And a few weeks later, I think that I have a chapter in a book called A Silent Scream for Help. And so I think this was a cry. She wanted help. She wanted love. It wasn't in the house. And I think she really wanted to be rescued. So we were there and she snapped out of it after a few weeks.
Really?
And interesting thing was, so I stayed with her for a number of weeks and we knew hospice was going to be there for 6 months. So hospice, I had to go back to LA because I still had business responsibilities there. So after, I think in May, so this was February. So I think in May, I went back to LA and then kept in touch with her. And, but she was off meds. She was probably on a dozen different medications.
And why did they take her off to begin with? Because they thought she was comatose, let her die?
Yep. It was basically let her die. The doctor never came. Doctor never even knew. He just, I don't know what the deal was. The doctor just said, you know, let it go.
Interesting.
So and, off meds.
So after the meds were off and after she snapped back, was she left off all the meds?
Pretty much, yeah. So for 3.5 years, she had a heart issue and a pacemaker. So eventually, we had to go, I think, with a low dose of digoxin for her heart. And that was it.
How old was she?
Pardon me?
How old was she at this time?
89.
Interesting.
And so digoxin for the heart, nothing else. And once she snapped out of it, she started with pumpkin pie and then sherbet. She loved sherbet and she ate about 8 bowls a day. That's all she wanted. And then she moved on to oatmeal, about 8 bowls of that a day. And she was a type 2 diabetic and thought, boy, she must be riding the most continuous sugar high. But she was doing great. She was back. She had her sense of humor. And so we didn't want to change a thing. So I think her own cure was the one that was better than the medications.
You know, Mark, most caregiver stories don't end happily. And aren't as positive as you just portrayed. Sounds like you had a pretty good deal here. You brought her back to life, and she was enjoying life. Yes.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, she had we had some issues. Part of the problem was the people who were over, they weren't a personal caregivers, but they were living in the house for about 3.5 years at that point, and they were the problem. So
really?
By Jersey law, we couldn't get rid of them. We had to come up with a compromise. So I had to live with these people for about 7 months.
Why? Let's back up. Why couldn't you get rid of them because of Jersey law? Were they employees?
Jersey law, I think if the people are a resident in a house for a certain period of time, and one of the ladies was over 60, by Jersey law, you can't boot them out. You had to come up with some kind of a compromise.
What and kind of crime would they have to commit to get them out? What if they were abusive? What if they were stealing? What if they were just
The problem was they were in the house. So I didn't want to, I was trying to ease the tension, not add to it. So I didn't want to, I mean, they were not really good people. They thought they were, but, anyway, I took over. So I was like, I called, I'm the new sheriff in town. So I was taking care of my mom. So I wasn't worried about my mom. They had very little interaction with her, but they added a lot of tension in the house. So it wasn't all smooth sailing. And then once
there was some stress there.
there was a ton of stress there. And what helped me, because we'll get to the thing where, again, it wasn't all smooth sailing. The house was in terrible shape. This was a beautiful, welcoming home that we grew up in. And now it was just trashed.
Wow.
So I started renovating. And the basement was the worst. So I started in the basement while these people were living there. So it became a stress relief therapy for me, because I'm banging 2x4s, ripping down walls, redoing plumbing and rebuilding and things like that. So there was a lot of...
You have all those skills, huh?
Yeah, I grew up with this stuff. And as a designer, you learn a lot of things. But we had a fire in our house in 1969. So I was 12 years old, and I was fascinated watching the guys rebuild our house. So I learned a lot there. My dad was pretty handy. He was more of a tinkerer than a craftsman. But I was an award-winning furniture maker in high school, and I was very good with wood and construction. And in college, for summer jobs, you took on construction and painting and stuff like that. So I learned a lot of skills over the years. So I rebuilt the house from the basement up while I was there, because once these people left, I wanted to restore dignity not only to my mom, but to her surroundings. And she loved it. She loved the new, I would, at that point, she still couldn't walk. So I would carry her upstairs. I gave her her first bubble bath in years in the renovated bathroom. She passed out in the tub. So I tried to do a good thing, and I thought I killed my mother. Huh. And I say, well, at least she smelled good. But I left her in the bath a little too long, and her blood pressure went way down. So I brought her back to bed, and about 30 minutes later, she woke up. And so she had no recollection of passing out, but she did remember the new bathroom. So it was a win-win.
Wow. So let's talk about any lines that you will not cross in dealing with 24/7 care.
Well, I think it's unusual for a son to take on the caregiving. And
mostly women.
Yeah. And while hospice was there, I learned a lot from hospice. I was a really good student. So I wanted to learn as much as I could while they were there so I could take over. And I did everything, changing diapers, changing the bedding, all her cooking, all at that point, taking care of all the shopping and the laundry. But one of the first things I did, because it's your mom, and wanting to feel pretty does not end at 89. So I bought her a new wardrobe. I didn't want these drab nightdresses. So I thought a new wardrobe would help perk her up a little bit. And then I created a thing called Day of Beauty. My mother loved going to the beauty salon. That was like her weekly trip or treat for herself.
Good son you are.
Pardon me?
What a good son you are.
Well, these are things, you know, I guess. But I mean, I don't think it's that unusual.
Yeah, not everybody does stuff like that. You're one of the good guys.
But I guess, yeah. But I grew up with, you know, watching my parents do this stuff.
Yeah.
And
it was modeled to you. And that's why I tell people, you know, be careful how you treat your parents or your elderly or the one you're caring for, because your children are watching you. And one day you're going to be that old person, and they're going to do the same thing.
It's payback. Yeah.
Payback.
I had some options, because I remember when my mother used to push my cuticles when I was a kid, and she thought it was necessary. But as a kid, I didn't think it was. And so when during Day of Beauty, she got a full sponge bath, and the hair was washed and blow dried. At that point, she had very long hair again, which was lovely. So I either braid it or put it in a ponytail. But I did her nails. She was very particular about her nails, because she used to be a hand model. So she had long, natural nails her whole life. But now they were dangerous, because as we get older, skin gets thinner, and she was very itchy. And with these lethal length nails and that itch, that really could have been a problem. So it took many days of beauty, but I had to trim those nails down. I had to be very careful and go very slow. But that was a big deal. But then she got her red lipstick and her red nail polish, and I think she was okay with it after a while.
Now, you should win Best Caregiver of the Year award, because the little things that you're caring for, you know, you're not just caring for your mother or caring for a loved one. You're really invested in making sure that their quality of life is improved. which is, you know, that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Is your loved one happy that you're caring for them, or are they, you know, or are they tolerating you?
Yeah. I think the main thing is, I'd say the big word is empathy. So you have to put yourself in their shoes,
right,
or in my mother's case, her non-slip safety socks, because she couldn't walk. But
sure. And you have kids, right?
I have no kids. This was my first child.
What a shame, because you modeled, you would have modeled your kids how to take care of you when you become needing a caregiver. Who's going to be your caregiver? Have you thought about that?
Yes, I have. I signed up, I think, one or two nephews. I'm very close with my sister's nephews. And so while taking care of my mom, you know, we were in touch and they would visit and stuff. That was another thing that was lovely. When I renovated the house, a lot of the family members, including me, we stayed away for a while because there was so much tension in the house with these people. So once they were out and the house became another a beautiful, inviting place, mm-hmm. grandchildren came back. Brothers and sisters spent more time there, and it was great for mom because she was surrounded by, she especially loved the grand and the great grandchildren.
Sure. How did you get rid of them, by the way?
I might have to take the fifth.
I have to. You made them an offer they couldn't refuse, huh?
Yeah, I'm from Jersey, so we
way.
Have our ways. Yeah. To be honest, we they had a child, so it was three generations that came, which was also a surprise. And Michael, my brother Michael, hired one person, and they came with the whole group.
Wow!
So we just said, okay,
were like roommates, and it's very difficult to get a roommate rid of a roommate.
Yeah,
in California.
I call them squatters, actually, because they did very little work and they lived for free for several months.
I got you.
So we came up with an agreement that we'll give you 6 months and you're out. And they knew they were leaving, but they waited to the last day of that agreement because they didn't want to pay rent anywhere.
Fight it legally or anything, right?
No. Because it wasn't just me that wanted them out. Or my older brother who hired them really took pity on them. So there was a little bit of sibling tension, I think, with that. So you have to make sure everybody in the family is in agreement. So we got everybody to sign on the 6 month thing. If it was any sooner, or if I tried to boot them out sooner, it would have been, I think, a little ugly with the family.
Sure.
So to keep it all, I guess, copacetic, I dealt with that. Go ahead.
Go ahead. I don't want to interrupt you. Go ahead.
I wanted to say with the tension. So while hospice was there, we did some research and stuff, and you find out you really do have to take breaks. So my little sister and I would take care of mom, but hospice was there. So we would go off and take walks to take daily breaks. I took over, I was alone there, and I said, I can take care of this. You know, this is no big deal. But it creeps up on you.
Yeah.
And it got to a point in June of 2013, I went in for emergency surgery because it felt like someone shot me in the gut. And I put off going to the emergency room because I had my mother to take care of. And about 3 days, I had a really bad fever. And then the next day I felt a little better. And then it came back with a vengeance the next day. So I finally drove myself to the emergency room on, 4 days later. And they said, you have diverticulitis, just from when I said I have a pain in the lower left abdomen. And they did a CAT scan, and it was not only diverticulitis, but it was punctured and infecting my body. And so it was very close. They said, if it got into your bloodstream, you would have been dead. So we had to go through surgery, and then that didn't go so well. So I went through a second surgery a few weeks later, and then 8 months later, a third surgery.
Oh, no.
So
is that all caused by stress?
I would have to say so, because I ate well.
It's like an ulcer, isn't it?
Pardon me?
It's like an ulcer, isn't it?
No, a diverticular, as we get older, in the colon, you have these little things which are almost like the appendix.
Uh-huh.
So you have these little pockets, and there's a rumor that like seeds and things like that from tomatoes and stuff like that, if they get into the pocket, they cause pain and a problem. But antibiotics can usually take care of that. In my situation, whatever got into the pocket exploded into the abdomen.
Wow.
So that caused the infection, and that caused some really serious, it could have been really bad.
Is that also what they call gut rot, or is that something different?
I think that's gut rot. I mean, I think it's different.
Okay.
So they had to take, they took originally 8 inches out of my colon.
Oh, wow.
And then there was an obstruction. And so 2 weeks later, I had to go in for another emergency surgery.
Gosh.
And then after that, there was an obstruction. 8 months later was the obstruction in my small intestine. So once you open up the gut, you have all kinds of problems that can be caused by adhesions, which are very sticky things. Once you open up that, it's like a perfect seal. And once you open that up, things start to happen. And so what was happening is these sticky things were causing these obstructions, and they had to go in. So I ended up losing about 12 inches of my digestive system. And and I don't want to say that was caused by my mom, but you know, the whole idea, because when you're doing this, you have, whether things are going well or not, you're in bed and you're not sure if when you get up in the morning, if your mom's going to be there. So you're always, at least I was, you're always worried about what's going on. I actually put a baby monitor in her room. And so during the day, she would sleep a lot. So I could do the construction of the house and just keep an eye on her because it had a video camera. And at night, she was a night person also. And so at night, boy, she would have conversations with somebody. She had a little bit of dementia and a little bit of a doctor came in a couple of years later. We had a doctor that made house calls that thought that she had Alzheimer's. And I disagreed. I said, listen, she may forget my name and she may see visions on the ceiling and all kinds of stuff. But I don't think that's dementia because I've played a doctor on TV and that doesn't prove it to me. But she did these tests, all these cognitive tests. And I thought mom did really well.
What would you do differently, knowing what you know now, to perhaps avoid all of your surgeries?
Well, you definitely got to take the breaks. You have to.
Regular checkups too?
Pardon me?
Were you getting your regular checkups? Were you someone who avoided doctors?
No, I mean, the last checkup, I think before this, the whole thing with the surgery was with my doctor in LA, who I had for about 20 years. So he said, you're in your mid 50s, you got to start taking care of the thing, like have a colonoscopy and stuff like that. And that was my last checkup. And then with all these emergency surgeries, I was getting great care and great medications. But one thing good about all those surgeries was I got a deeper empathy and understanding of my mother's situation because we had a lot of things similar after that. So I could no longer walk without assistance in the hospital, at least. I was on heavy medication, so I was seeing visions also. Mm. I had very little control over my bowel movements. And I took, there was a protein drink called Prostat that we were also giving my mother. So it was all these things in combination. I'm going, oh my gosh, I'm becoming my mother. So anyway, a happy ending was I survived it. We had to get someone in to help with the heavy lifting, but I was still involved until my mother passed. And so I was still
pretty good. How old are you today, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm a million years old. I am. I just turned actually 66.
Oh, 3 years younger than me.
Oh, yeah? Okay, good.
Pretty good. Well,
you're in good shape.
Considering all you've been through.
It's the wine. So I think that, it's the important thing is that any of the little things you can do for your loved one, if there is anything that they loved in the past, if you can bring that back into them, whether it's music. My mother was Irish, so I played a lot of Irish music. I also did the river dance in front of her, which made her laugh, but made my shins cry. So there's lots of things you can do. But And it's
worth
the pain.
I tell you, if your loved one is happy, the caregiver is going to be happy. So
yeah, absolutely.
You have every motive to do that, you know, and you should be doing it, you know, out of joy, not out of duty, you know.
Right.
It might start out as duty. And if it does, you know, because many people are drafted into this. They didn't sign up for this. It wasn't on their resume. They don't know what the heck they're doing. But, you know, learn and turn it into a happy experience. Otherwise, you're going to end up, you know, needing a caregiver as well. The statistics are shocking. 30% of caregivers die before their loved ones do. About 60% will become sicker than the one they're caring for. Many of them getting the very disease or illness that they have and needing a caregiver of their own. So you want to stop that.
Yeah.
Also, you bring up a good point about having bad caregivers. That's a big problem. And how do you get rid of a bad caregiver? I know you pleaded the fifth on that, but if someone in our audience says, you know, I got to get rid of this one, what do you recommend?
Well,
short of murder, you know.
Right. I mean, if you can sit down with that, I mean, first of all, they should be licensed and qualified. These people, especially the one that was the personal assistant, was not licensed or qualified.
Okay, so that'll avoid a lot of problems right there.
Yeah,
right?
Okay. Yeah. So you can easily just say I want to, and that's how we got rid of the personal assistant or the
and
personal
references
hygiene.
Too. Did you have references on them?
No, I have a chapter in the book about my brother. I call him my brother Teresa. If there's a desperate person who needs a job, no matter what, Michael will give them a shot.
And he will give the shirt off his back, right?
Well, he'll give the shirt off his back. But when it came to my mother's care, I said, that's where I draw the line. Because we don't want to mess with that. You don't mess with family. If you want to do that at work or wherever, because he hires a lot of interesting people, and I always ask him, where do you find these people? Like, oh, God sends them to me. So God must have sent these people to him, and then Mark got rid of them.
So what other things do we look for finding good caregivers?
Well, what we did, we did do, because I wasn't planning on jumping in for the 24/7, so we did interview people. So we went through the interviewing process, which is very interesting. So first of all, you want to see if they're qualified, and you have a list of things that you want and whether they're willing or to do this or not. So you really have, it's a job interview. And then the next, if they pass that level, then they have to meet the person they're caring for, and they have to hit it off, because
sometimes the loved one doesn't like who you're selecting.
Right. Right. So that's a done deal.
Sometimes they never like the ones you're selecting, and then you realize, okay, she's not going to like anybody.
Yeah. Well, that's a possibility too. If you have somebody who's just impossible. My mother was not, but she was, she had a good BS detector. And we had two other groups that came in before these people stayed 3.5 years. The first person lasted about a year. She was a disaster. The second people were great. And they got along with my mother, and my mother got along with them. And it was because they were happy people. And my mother could sense that. And they liked her, and they had, and after they left, they bought a house, and that's the reason they left. They would come back and visit. These were generally good people who liked what they did. And then the next group, I think they were desperate, and they got a great deal. They got a nice house and a nice location in a beautiful town. And they didn't care about the person they had to take care of, really. They kind of put up with it, and that was the shame of it.
Yeah, you know, it's a shame, but a lot of Alzheimer's or dementia patients become paranoid and start accusing the caregiver of stealing, you know, they're looking for things like that. And it's sad, because I know that happened with my mother-in-law. She thought I was breaking into the house and stealing things to try to drive her crazy. I mean, just paranoid. She'd call the cops 3-4 times a day saying, somebody broke into the house. Somebody stole this. They stole my silverware. And then they brought it back 3 days later. They stuck it under my bed. They're trying to drive me crazy. Really, she was doing all this, you know, but she wouldn't admit that she. So you were very fortunate that none of that happened with your mother.
Right. Yeah, I am. I that brings up, because with my grandmother, She would tell me stories, and I was 15 when I heard these stories, and I was like, let's go get those people who are doing all these things to her. And then my aunt who lived with her would cool me off with the truth. And I was like, that was the first time that I understood, oh man, this could be dangerous. No, she was good. If anybody stole, it was my mother. She would steal, she would cheat at cards. She would steal ice cream from me after she finished her bowl. And I would ask her about it. I said, why are you doing that? She goes, you had plenty. I said, so you're doing this to help me. She goes, yes. And then she would continue. So
you have one book?
One book.
And talk about that. Why should people buy your book?
Well, it's a good story. I mean, my mom was very cool, and my dad too. There's a lot in there about my dad. They taught me really good lessons that really, I think, paved the way for me taking this job. Because people say, oh, you're great. So I said, no, this was the right thing to do. And there's stories about how that affected me as a child. And there's some tips in there, I guess, of what I did. It's entertaining. There is a lot of tears, but there's a lot of laughs. I have the responses I'm getting from people are they're crying and laughing at the same time, and they're sharing their stories because a lot of people have either gone through it, are going through it, or will go through this. So they have to make a choice whether they want to take this on or not. And I think from my experience, it was a pretty positive experience. So hopefully it will inspire others to jump in and do this.
So what came first, the film or the book?
The film? What? The film?
It says one award-winning short film.
Yeah, that's something different. I did a parody on...
I thought a cup of tea on the commode was the film, but that's the book.
No, just the book. But I have had a couple people say this should be a film, so... Stay tuned.
So this is a heartwarming story, A Cup of Tea on the Commode. And where can we get that book?
It's on Amazon, a lot of other online retailers. If you want more information, I mean, you can go to Amazon. You can read some of the reviews and stuff, which have been very, very nice. But also A Cup of Tea on the Commode.org. I have about 130 YouTube videos of book teasers that I've been producing and putting out for the last year and a half. And the blog is very good, has some nice excerpts and things too. But the book is good. And I remember you talked to one of your previous guests about doing the audio book.
Yes.
That's going to be hard. That's going to be all that my acting training is going to have to
It was hard for me. I've written, five books, and the sixth book is the one that I did the audio on, and it really took a lot out of me, but I'm glad I did it, and I'm happy the way it turned out. Yeah. And I'm thinking about doing that for the other books, but I just can't seem to get the nerve up to get started.
it's going to be tough because I've done a few chapters.
You want it to come out good, you don't want to skimp on it.
Right. And I've done the first few chapters I've done. And then if I start another chapter, and it's not even a sad chapter, but I'll start bawling. Writing this book took a long time because I had to, it helped moving to France to get away from everything and just reflect. And I had
a
lot of.
Are you going to be in France forever? You like that place?
Yeah, I think so. I think.
But you're away from family, right?
Yeah, but with Zoom and FaceTiming and everything, it's pretty cool. Plus, I've had three of my siblings come out to visit and a cousin.
I was going to say, who comes out to visit you? It gives them an excuse to come to France.
It's fabulous. Because, hey, come see me in the south of France. It's a pretty good invitation.
And how long does it take to get from the airport to the south of France?
Which airport?
Whichever one you recommend they go to.
Well, there's Montpellier is about 50 minutes away, and that will take you anywhere. It's pretty good, except in the summer might be a little crazy with it.
Now, don't they want to visit Paris when they come also?
Paris is about a 4.5 hour train ride or maybe an 8 hour car ride or hour and a half
ride.
hour and a half plane trip. So.
All right. Well, hey, we could just keep going, but I can't believe how fast the time goes. I just wanted to Thank you for coming on the show. And I wanted to thank all my guests who listened to the show, who've made me the number one caregiver podcast on the internet. And I just want to also plug my book, my number one bestseller, Secrets from the Hammock, Uncommon Wisdom for Uncommon Times, spreading wisdom all over the world, available wherever books are sold and on my free membership website, caregiverdave.com, where you can also schedule a free 30-minute initial coaching call to talk about whatever you're struggling with. Many times a 30-minute call is all it takes to resolve a big problem. And I invite you all to join my Caregiver Dave Facebook online support group, 34,000 caregivers, lots of tools, resources, videos, and this radio show as well. And I also would like you all to click the like or follow button on whatever platform you're watching or listening to this interview on. It helps us reach even more caregivers by improving Google's search engine algorithms. So again, thank you, all my listeners out there all over the world, for tuning in every Wednesday. Until next week, same time, same channel. May God richly bless you all. Thank you. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, David. Thank you for the opportunity to share the word.
Dave Nassani, the caregiver's caregiver, has just released his sixth book entitled It's My Life Too, Thrive to Stay Alive as a Caregiver. It was specifically written for caregivers who know they should be putting their needs first, but just don't know how. Dave is the sole caregiver to his wife, Charlene, since 1996. He knows firsthand what caregivers are going through because he is one. He now speaks all across the country, offering caregivers his amazing caregiver support package. Even the airlines tell us that in the event of an emergency, to put your oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. They know that those who don't heed their advice often black out, thus becoming unable to help either themselves or their child. And caregivers are exactly the same way. It's My Life Too, Thrive and Stay Alive as a Caregiver, will help caregivers who are neglecting their sleep, diet, and social life and learn to put their needs first. Pick up your copy today or buy one for your special caregiver on sale everywhere and at caregiverdave.com.
Sometimes it feels like the sun will never rise, like the birds will never sing again.